This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Hey, what's up, conversationists? This is your friendly neighborhood Ro from the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast. You're about to embark on another conversation with my friends and yours, Pat and Charles. Thanks for joining the discussion. Strap in and get ready for a brand new Conversations podcast. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Conversations. I'm Charles.
Wait, now?
No, not now.
But now?
Not now, now. Now.
And I'm Pat, and this is
episode 121.
The Force surrounds us, guides us, and sets the fate of us all in motion. But perhaps it can also take a different path, a path that can only be seen through the world of the wills.
Yeah, I don't know who invited Jeffrey Wright, but he made my part of the intro so much easier. Uh-oh, you know what that means. Whenever we get a Charles C. Westcott intro, we are back for a What If episode.
Yes. We're not talking about Qui-Gon this time, so I should probably not be a blubbering mess.
There will be less tears, for sure. Hopefully. Unless they are tears of laughter.
Yes. But perhaps his name will show up. We'll see. Who knows? Who knows?
Oh, boy.
It's those worlds and the wills.
So ridiculous. So, again, you know the drill. We got two topics. Your first topic, which I came up with. So, you'll go, then I'll go. And then the one you came up with, then I'll go, then you'll go.
Cool. All right.
All right.
So what are those topics? Let's tee them off first.
Topic number one. first topic is, what if Anakin Skywalker died on Mustafar?
Mm.
Yes.
All right. That's a good one.
And the other one is, what if Orson Krennic just survived Rogue One?
Ooh, I wish Johnny Carson was here.
Top 5 reasons why.
Yeah, so there we go. Those are the two topics we're going to talk about today. And likely a commercial break in the middle.
Yeah, we'll see. If anybody wants to pay us to do this.
We haven't found one yet.
No, sir.
All we've been doing is paying people to listen to it.
No, it's better than being paid to shut up.
This is true. That is a good point. All right. So I will kick it off with the what if Anakin died on Mustafar.
Yes.
So obviously we're all quite familiar with that pivotal scene in the movie. And I hate you, you're my brother, the high ground, the whole bit. Very, very emotional. So this can be a bit controversial, but let's just see what this is. So, as Anakin died, Palpatine flipped Mustafar for like a 300% profit. He abdicated his seat as emperor. He exiled himself on Exegol. And he brought a screen printing press and made weird t-shirts with things like, Palpatine equals Sidious. Yoda is a chump. And it was Jar Jar all the time. End of my story. So what do you have?
Wow. All right.
Right. All right. So that's obviously not what... he would never have made 300% profit, so that wasn't possible.
No, not with that lava heap.
Exactly. So obviously, Anakin's dead. So at this point, Sidious would still be looking for another apprentice, you know, to help him, you know, rule the galaxy and his, you know, prop up his sociopathic nature, whatever. Who would have been the next powerful force sensitive that would have been in the lineup? And at this point, the temple, the creche, is depleted. Everything's scattered if they're not dead. So
yeah, because Palpatine shot himself in the foot and was like, kill all the younglings.
Yeah. He obviously was not going to find his next apprentice there. Most of all the other Jedi were Order 66. That avenue is also gone. So what he would be doing is reaching out to Maul, and they would agree to work together. Now I'm saying working together, like master apprentice-ish kind of thing, because Maul is a known quantity to Sidious, as Sidious is a known quantity to Maul. So they agree to start working together again. So that means there's no prison for Maul post-Siege of Mandalore. And Sidious has his Sith Lord to assist him, you know, establishing the new galaxy and his rule, and the Shadow Collective, which is a side bonus that Sidious could use and or use influence. And so there's the whole sort of underworld side to it as a benefit. And Maul regains the stature that he thought he should never have lost. And so that plays into his sort of mind of like, you know, I never should have been let go as the apprentice. So there's a definitely playing to his weaknesses in that. And he gets to keep his crime syndicates. But most importantly, that takes Talzin off the table for being a target for Palpatine to want to kill her as a threat for the time being, of course. Now, as all this is going on, of course, Sidious also has a backup apprentice that Maul doesn't know about called Darth Kor, but I'll get to that later. So that's track one, Sidious's side and the apprentice side. Track two is Obi-Wan's. You know, like we saw in the movie, when Palpatine arrives on Mustafar and Anakin is essentially dying, and in the movie where he's being transformed into Vader, we do cut to Yoda on Polis Massa. He's sort of getting that sort of vision of it. So obviously, in this case, it's not Vader being created. It's Anakin literally dying in the Force. So if Yoda was sensitive enough to see that in meditation when he was being turned into Vader and doing his final fall, we never get an indication on screen that Obi-Wan had any inkling of that happening. It's plausible that he just never knew either way. And of course, that's sort of reinforced, right, in the Kenobi series. But if that sort of tremor happened for Yoda, Yoda knows about that, and something has happened to Anakin, and likely that he's dead. But you know, and Yoda never told Obi-Wan anyways, nothing. So that doesn't really change that side of the story, because for him, it doesn't really mean anything. It's happened and it's done. Now, we know that Padme was buried with a pregnant belly. So the assumption is that everyone around there, the ploy at least, was that she never did give birth. And again, there was never any indication that Palpatine knew that there was a child or two, for that matter, that were born before she died. So that part still goes on. We still have Bail taking Leia, and we still have Obi-Wan taking Luke to Tatooine. So fast forward a few years, and Darth Maul's obsession with Kenobi, much like Vader's obsession with Luke in a certain way, led him to find the Bail Obi-Wan connection in in Rob's Jedi Temple archives. So similar to what we saw Reva do. And so Maul hired the mercenaries to capture Leia. Some of the plot points that we saw in the Kenobi series transpired. But Maul arrives on Tatooine in a very different headspace than he did like we saw in Rebels. Because now he's not sort of twisting in the wind trying to find himself. He's quasi-aligned with the Emperor. He's got his crime syndicates. He's there for a very different reason. Well, similar reason with his obsession with Obi-Wan, but in a much better mental health state. So he shows up and he finds Obi-Wan at the Larges' homestead, and that sets off a battle between Owen and Beru, because we can see they can kick ass when they need to, and Obi-Wan. They're all three of them fighting off Maul, and it was a very spirited battle, but Maul does finally fall to Obi-Wan's lightsaber. So he does kill him, And he essentially repeats that same line about the chosen one. So now flip back over to track number one, Sidious' apprentice. Okay. So Maul is dead. Luke is still safe. The secret of Obi-Wan being on Tatooine with Luke is still safe. So now Barriss Offee wasn't a dark side follower. She did sort of get to the edge of it while she was trying, and she obviously was a major player in Ahsoka's being blamed for the explosion. Sidious kept the clones from executing her in Order 66, and he was able to pull her to the dark side with the promise to reestablishing the Jedi Order in a new way that emphasized family and really addressed all of the problems that she talked about during the trial. So Barriss Offee is his new apprentice, and she is Darth Kor. I just gave her name called Darth Kor, so it's kind of cool. All right, so we now have his full new apprentice in the waiting, even before Maul is dead. But now that he is dead, she completely stands in as his new apprentice. So back to Obi-Wan. So while the guilt Obi-Wan felt that was never completely relieved about his, you know, the death of Anakin and the closure he didn't get, like we saw in Kenobi, Maul's death and what he said to him did affect him greatly. And at that point, Qui-Gon finally appears, like we saw in the show, again, obviously in a different timeline, a little bit further on in his development. And he helps Obi-Wan find the path to acceptance about Anakin and to keep him strong mentally all the way through, as we see up to and including A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
In that one scene where they're at Obi-Wan's little hut there, he says, "Who killed my father?" And Obi-Wan replies with, "The Galactic Emperor killed him." So, of course, not Darth Vader. So that's how that line changed a little bit. So obviously, Obi-Wan wasn't killed by Darth Vader on the Death Star. So he's communicating with Luke from the command post on Yavin 4. You know, the Death Star is destroyed, and much celebration ensues. And Obi-Wan is among the dignitaries on the dais and the whole bit. So it's kind of fun. He's sitting in there. He doesn't get a gold medal, though. And neither does Chewie in this line, yeah, unfortunately. So now we flip back to track one with Sidious's apprentice. He instructs Darth Kor to find the young rebel that was main part of this destruction of the Death Star. So now we fast forward to Empire Strikes Back. So because Obi-Wan felt her fall to the dark side, he felt the need to get some help for Luke, because he knows obviously he's just not I'm too old for this type of adventure. So Bail puts him in contact with Harrison Dula so that he can get in contact with Ahsoka, and he sees her as an ally for Luke to work together to defeat this new darkness that he felt. So when he meets up with her, she was on Barriss's path as well, because she also felt that fall to the dark side. And when they're reunited, of course, it's really emotional, and, you know, hugs all around and everything. And that beautiful little picture is shattered by a surprise attack by Darth Kor, who, of course, in this case is Barriss Offee. So they're basically tracking each other. And then in the ensuing battle, Obi-Wan is killed. Ahsoka retreats and meets back up with the rebels to help Luke and the rest of the rebels, of course, you know, during the Empire Strikes Back. Going back now to track one and Sidious's apprentice, Palpatine sees Luke now as a potentially even stronger apprentice than Anakin. So he instructs Darth Kor now to set up a trap at the Cloud City, very similar to what Darth Vader had done. And so then Luke evades the trap, battles Offee, and while battling on that plank area, you know, like in that tunnel area, like we see in the Empire, and this is like the big reveal of Empire Strikes Back, she tells Luke that the Emperor didn't kill your father. Obi-Wan let your father die. And he is destroyed by that. No! She cuts off his hand. He drops and gets out of there. And so then they're picked up by Lando and Leia in the Millennium Falcon. And so in Return of the Jedi, after Han's rescue, Ahsoka and Luke travel to Dagobah. And of course, Obi-Wan's Force Ghost is there, you know, appears and says, "Ben, why didn't you tell me?" And so they have this long discussion back and forth about the will of the Force, how Anakin's turn to the dark side was all but sealed, and that's why he left them there. So he has some closure on that. And Lando, further on the movie, manages to get Ahsoka and Luke onto the Death Star 2. They confront Palpatine and Barriss. So they're fighting against each other. And then a massive, impressive battle ensues. And during the battle, Ahsoka and Barriss are sort of going one-on-one. And she forgives her for her involvement in the Jedi Council, for her expulsion. And with that type of selfless act, Barriss gives up her dark side and turns on Sidious. The three of them battle, and they defeat him. And that is the end of my what if Anakin died.
Interesting. All right. Okay. You went with Maul first. Okay. All right.
Yep.
That's okay. I think Maul is way too prideful and holds way too much of a grudge against Palpatine to ever do anything but try and kill him.
Okay. Okay.
But in my scenario, the events of the prequel trilogy that led to the epic duel wherein the Sith battles the Jedi, the dark attacks the light, it still happens, as is willed by the Force. Anakin still doesn't learn from the high ground and is stricken down by his friend, former mentor, brother, Obi-Wan. As he lay there in agony, Palpatine realizes he forgot to press Find My Apprentice on his compad and doesn't reach Anakin in time. So, he doesn't reach Anakin in time to save him, and as Anakin succumbs to his injuries, there isn't enough Bacta in the galaxy to save him. He dies. Since he dies a Sith, and there is no redemption arc, he doesn't come back as a Force ghost, so don't even think about it. Obi-Wan rushes over to Polis Massa to meet Padme, where she dies in childbirth because reasons. And old Ben keeps his promise to watch over the boy on Tatooine, where he lives with his aunt and uncle, while Bail and Brio Organa raise Leia on Alderaan. Meanwhile, in the Galactic Empire, Palpatine searches the galaxy for another apprentice because Kenobi sliced his golden dreams in quarters.
Okay.
He comes across a young Galen Marek, who as a boy gets trained in the ways of the Sith by Lord Sidious. As Starkiller comes into power, he sharpens his skills and abilities.
Oh boy. Wow. Okay.
Through these 18 years before we jump into the original trilogy, he trains and becomes physically more powerful than Vader without the limitations. And the inhibited power due to the suit. Luke then proceeds to be trained by Obi-Wan, who doesn't know Marek as intimately as he knew Anakin, so he doesn't know how to best prepare Luke to face him.
Like, so Galen Marek, he's from a video game, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, it becomes a real problem. Because Luke finds himself in a battle with Starkiller in Palpatine's throne room, like the events of Return of the Jedi unfold. Only if Luke is able to defeat Starkiller, he's defeated and destroyed along with his pitiful rebellion. If Luke is skilled enough to best Starkiller, but not kill him, he still has to face the Emperor. As Palpatine has the upper hand against Luke and begins electrocuting him, Luke cries out, but doesn't call on the mercies of his father. He has no such bond with Starkiller, and Galen Marek doesn't come to his aid to destroy the Emperor. And Palpatine does not end up humpty-dumptying his way down the reactor shaft. Instead, he unleashes his wrath on Luke and the Rebel fleet, a la the Rise of Skywalker, ending their pitiful rebellion, solidifying the Empire as a mainstay stranglehold on the galaxy.
Oh. Wow. Okay. So everybody's dead.
No, just the good guys.
Okay. And the Ewoks.
Yeah, and the Ewoks.
Yeah, you had to think about that for a second, right?
Right, yeah, they didn't enter the equation.
Yeah.
But they have now. Yeah, so...
Wow.
There's no redemption arc for Vader, and then therefore no no lifeline for Luke in his time of need.
Dang.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why in my what if, not having Anakin there as a you know, as the ultimate redemption, like there's no way that Luke could defeat the Emperor alone.
Right.
Luke, right. Luke, and Ahsoka probably couldn't defeat the Emperor alone.
Right.
But throw in a third Jedi, or you know, redeemed Jedi in Barriss, maybe they could do it, pull it off. But wow, dang.
Yeah.
That's heavy.
Yep. I don't know why you made me do this.
It would have been interesting too then to like in my what if the rebels still win and Luke is alive and everyone else is still alive. But,
yeah, it's been years all sunshine and roses.
Yeah, it's like they're all dead.
Yep.
It would be interesting then to think forward through the Ahsoka series that we just you know just passed, where we have Anakin showing up in the World Between Worlds, right? Now, yeah. That was pre-fall of Anakin, so that probably could still happen in either scenario, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's a different timeline, Anakin. And
that's a different timeline, Ahsoka. You're talking about Ahsoka from after the original trilogy.
Yes.
And this is now after they've "quote unquote defeated the Emperor," which come on, and yeah, so like everything, I think everything is different because she's not been in exile, she's not been hiding from anyone or anything because yeah. The threat is gone. I guess that brings us to our quick break.
Yes.
Between the questions and both. Go to some counseling. I can see a therapist and figure out why I come up with such terrible results to these things.
All right. So that takes care of our first what if. Before we get to number two, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Bow, bow.
Oh, I could use a Volusian manganese liquor.
Yeah, I'm thinking a whiskey.
Oh, good call. Lots to choose from.
Do you want a selection from the top shelf?
Definitely. The chosen one whiskey, please.
Why that one?
Well, there was this battle.
It's over, Anakin! I have the higher ambient temperature!
You underestimate my proving!
You were the chosen one! It was said you'd destroy bad whiskies, not join them!
I'll barrel you!
You were my distillery, Anakin!
Wow. Okay. I guess instead of top shelf, it should be called the high ground.
Yeah, no. Like any good scotch, it gets darker as it ages. Chosen One Whiskey. All the body, none of the legs.
Bow, bow. All right. And we're back. Thank you to our sponsor. And so... just before the commercial, of course, we finished our first what if Anakin died on Mustafar, which was a fun exploration on one side and a horrendous tragedy on the other side. So very interesting. So second one we have is what if Krennic survived Rogue One?
Mm.
And so since I came up with this one, you're going to go first, and I'll follow up with mine after.
All right. So basically, I had an idea for just a question, and I've kind of integrated that into this as well. And so I'll tell you what the question is if you behave yourself. So as we all know, Orson Krennic was the man orchestrating the creation of the Death Star for the Empire. He enlisted the knowledge and experience of the former Imperial scientist Galen Erso, another Galen, and at the expense of his family and freedom, the events of Rogue One unfold pretty well as they did on screen, but Krennic intercepts a comm referencing Erso's flaw in the Death Star plans. And that was the question that I had was like, what if the Empire found out about his flaw before they went live with beta testing?
Okay.
And like, so, you know, if they knew about that before everything, how would that change things? Which, so the first way it changes things is that Krennic intercepts the comm. And of course, as we know, between him and Tarkin, all sort of vying for the affection of Daddy, and you know, trying to be the favorite son, he hightails it over to the Emperor near the time of the end of Rogue One.
You're talking Krennic, and I was heading over to the Emperor.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So he is now no longer on Scarif. And he, what's that?
That's for Roe, Scarif.
Yes, exactly. of course, Roe, as we all know, as the pod father, the commander in chief of the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast. So, basically, he takes a shuttle to see Vader, and, well, stuff still happens on Scarif, and he's not a part of it. So as the Death Star undergoes completion and then is trial run on the beautiful sunset beaches of Scarif and explodes the place, he doesn't die because he's not there.
Right.
So he tells the Emperor about this flaw. And of course, since Tarkin was trying to take credit for everything, he doesn't know that Krennic has left Scarif and assumes that he has died on Scarif.
Okay.
So he communicates with the Emperor and says, you know, listen, this whole battle station was my idea, and takes complete credit for it, as he would. And as he did.
He would, absolutely.
And so the problem is, Krennic is there with the Emperor when he receives this this holo. So the Emperor, one, knows that he's lying. And two, decides, hey, if there's this flaw in this thing, and you're responsible for this thing, then you're responsible for the flaw. So, of course, he decides to punish Tarkin in the greatest of ways by making him wear slippers on set for the rest of filming. How dare he? So, so basically, the Empire then, one, has time to patch that hole. And then they, you know, they weld a piece of Beskar across it.
Plasticeal.
Exactly. Yes. So they're able to prevent the torpedo from blowing the thing up.
Wow. Okay.
But so Obi-Wan has his plan, and he's like, all right, so I'm going to distract this guy so you can escape, you know, with the princess and the plans and do all this galaxy saving and planet rescuing that you guys need to do. He catches wind because there is a communication with the Death Star getting the the maintenance crew out there to fix the hole.
Hmm.
And he's like, oh, crap, they found out about it. Well, he probably said carabasse. But they found out about the flaw, and now that whole business of Luke trying to explode the place, that's probably not going to happen. So he, instead of facing Vader, doesn't, and he ends up having to destroy the place from the inside.
Wow.
Yeah. So he, you know, there's the reactor core where, you know, where the torpedo ends up to blow the place up.
Yeah, yeah.
Obi-Wan's got to find it from the inside. He's got to take the right elevator and stuff. And he finds his way there. Takes a thermal detonator to the thing, and that's the end of that. Problem is, it's also the end of him.
That's good. Yeah, wow.
So he still dies on the Death Star.
Well, in the Death Star, yeah.
Right. Yes.
Well, he dies all over the Death Star.
Yes, he does. And I mean, Vader probably escaped. I feel like Vader still escaped.
Yes. Yeah.
Because he figured that they were, you know, the rebels were still going to try and do their thing. So once all the dust and debris settles from exploded Death Star 1, the Emperor's like, listen, man. Tarkin still died because he was still on the Death Star.
Right. Yeah.
But Krennic is still with the Emperor.
Right. Wow. Okay.
So the Krennic, you know, he kind of becomes the right hand man.
Well, he's very ambitious, so he would take every opportunity to do so.
He would indeed. So you know, he maintains his status as a high ranking Imperial official. And also, he is in charge of various strategies, you know, military endeavors and such. So on Hoth, they're way more prepared, you know, against a boy, his thermal detonator and lightsaber. And and they sneak attack, surprise the place, and bing, bang, boom. Rebels are gone. Empire wins.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. What's wrong with me?
Oh, my God.
Why do you make me do this? I don't like this. I don't want to play anymore.
Wow. I mean, so because Krennic didn't die on Scarif, the entire Rebel Alliance is destroyed in one movie fewer than your Anakin dying on Mustafar. They at least all died. They had until the end of Return of the Jedi before they were all wiped out and smoked. You're doing it now in Canada? Wow.
I mean, of all places.
Of all places. Wow.
I don't know how this keeps happening, but I hate it.
Dang.
I mean, to be fair, it was a little sketch on Hoth as it is. Like, they barely made it out of there.
They did.
So, like, one wrong move for them, or, like, you know, if they... One bad pass that gets intercepted by the Empire anyway, and that would have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I own Canon single-handedly saved basically the Alliance.
Yeah, exactly. So all I gotta do is blow that thing up and come on.
Yeah.
Like, it's so far-fetched.
Yeah.
Don't come at me with your simple tricks and nonsense. I don't want to do this anymore.
No more what-ifs. This is the end.
I need happy what-ifs.
Okay, well... That having been said,
you're like, what? It makes sense.
It does make sense. And the ambitious side of both of these guys is crazy. Obviously, we see the, you know, the rise of Tarkin through, you know, the Clone Wars, from Captain all the way up to Moff, you know, and that rise, you don't do that without taking credit where credit isn't due. You just take credit.
Yes. Speaking of taking credits.
You know, we saw a whole bunch of that in Rogue One. And
yeah,
how ambitious Krennic was. And in some of the novels, too, to the build-up of Rogue One, you see that as well. Him rising through the ranks and being, you know, really close with Galen Erso, and why he did trust him. But, of course, ultimately, he couldn't. So, before we kick off mine, it's funny is that in the movie Rogue One, he's constantly referring to Tarkin as Governor Tarkin. Now, is that him just, like, being a jerk? Because his full title, wasn't he a Moff at that point?
Yeah, because after the Death Star created, then he was Grand Moff.
Promoted. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's in the same way that Leia calls him Governor Tarkin. He's kind of a jerk.
Right, okay, that's what I get it, because I checked his timeline. It's like, yeah, he was a Moff by now, so he's just being a jerk, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
got it. All right, so my story changes after he leaves Mustafar, and he has his little rendezvous with Lord Vader, and at that point, he heads to Coruscant. Now, Krennic has two goals on Coruscant. One is to find a whole new team of experts that to replace the ones who just died on Edu, and to pour over the Death Star plans to find any vulnerabilities. And because of the security problems on Edu, is there something bigger? And, you know, even Tarkin mentions the same thing. And the second goal he has on Coruscant is to get an audience with the Emperor, much like yours. But in mine, he doesn't. The Emperor doesn't give a crap about this guy. At all.
Okay.
He's dissed, and
it's because he hasn't found the vulnerability yet.
And Vader alludes to it. You know, I didn't summon you here to grovel or like to complain. I'm sorry. Oh, I apologize in your busy schedule, you know? So it's much the same thing with Krennic and the Emperor, where the Emperor sees Tarkin as his superior. So, you know, complaints go up the chain of command. So he doesn't get that personal audience. But what he does do, he retrieves his personal backup copy of the Death Star plans from his office. And while he's getting these things, gathering his stuff to get this investigation going on his side, he hears about the attack on Scarif. On Scarif. We'll start pronouncing it properly, maybe. No one's going to understand why we're doing that. So he heads there in a shuttle just in time to witness it being destroyed by the Death Star.
Mm.
Of course, as we see, Vader pursues Leia, who has the plans. And at this point, Krennic boards the Death Star. Now, the fact that in the movie, Krennic is killed, obviously for Tarkin, that's a happy outcome, right? But not necessarily that if he didn't die there, he was going to kill him. So it's not like he's out to kill him just because he gets on the Death Star. As we see in New Hope, that chair is not empty. Krennic is sitting in there among all of the other higher-ranking officials, and that goes on. Him and his team begin to analyze the Death Star plans. They do identify a potential flaw that was spoken about and Galen placed, but they are already on final approach to Yavin and ready for battle. So then he has a meeting with Tarkin. And Vader's in there as well. And he tells him about the flaw shortly just before the whole engagement happens. And Vader, standing there, it seems like you have nothing more to explain, Director Krennic. And he force chokes him and kills him.
Wow. So he dies anyway.
He dies anyway. He gets an extra 12 hours of life, maybe. Maybe a day. Maybe a day.
More than our rebels got.
And the Battle of Yavin unfolds as we saw it in New Hope. And the other side of it, I think as well, it played into this, is that even when Tarkin was made aware of the flaw by that underling, in a moment of triumph, you know, I think that the hubris and the overconfidence of Tarkin and the Empire itself would never have considered that as a major threat. Yes, it's a flaw, but really, come on, it's going to take a 1 in a million shot to make that happen. Oh man. So
yeah.
It took Luke and the Force to make that happen. So as unlikely as that,
it's like bullseyeing womp rats in his teeth.
Exactly. So yes, in my scenario, Krennic lives another day. One day.
Another day lives to fight another day. Literally, one other day.
Another day. But yes, and then Vader throws the line linked to what he had spoken to him about in Rogue One right back at him. So, yeah. And that's it. That's what if Krennic survived Rogue One.
Wow. All right. Well, there you have it.
So, in both of my stories, the Rebel Alliance lives.
Uh-huh.
Shiny, happy people.
Yes. Yep. You Canadian optimist.
Yes.
Boy. I don't want to do this.
Ever again.
Oh, man. Yeah, so that was fun.
That was fantastic.
I like the Rebels losing. Apparently. A lot more than I anticipated.
Yeah.
This is what, our third what if?
I think so. This could be our fourth.
Could be. Either way, you can hear our other ones.
Yes.
They're anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Oh.
However, very best place to find and listen is on our very own website. At conversations.com. We're on the facebook.com/conversations. I guess we still haven't gotten back together with Twitter, so we're still the X. at Swations. Instagram, conversations. The Threads account is at conversations on there.
Mm-hmm.
We have an Etsy shop, and that is Commerce Swations.
Brilliant.
If you forget any of those or didn't read the show notes, wait, there's show notes? Are there show notes?
There are show
there
notes.
There better yeah. be show notes or else you're not getting paid this week, Westcott. link.tree/conversations. And if you're looking for more links, we are a part of the Red 5 Network. In fact, we are founding members. So, Ro from the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast, we appreciate all that you do for us, including tolerating our nonsense. You can find him and all of our other friends over at bio.link/red5.
Very nice. We're proud founding members, by the way.
I mean, yes.
Wow. This is the fourth World of Wills that we've done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yikes. I don't know why mine keep being terrible.
But it's funny to think that like how one small thing could spell ultimate doom. And then just like you said, it speaks to the frailty of the association of the Alliance. Like, you know, all it takes is one blow and you're done.
Yeah.
When you're trying to take down such a huge machine like the Empire.
Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. Well, with all that being said, I guess it's time to close it out and join us next time as we explore the world of the Wills.
Greetings, listener. Just a reminder that the podcast you just heard is a proud member of the Red 5 Network family. Red5Network.com offers you a great variety of shows you'll be sure to love. So the next time you're itching for quality content, make sure you head over to Red5Network.com. You'll find this podcast along with a whole lot more. All wings report in. It's the Red 5 Network.